Rewind, your year in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
Today, I have declared a public health emergency.
This was the week, JR, that the coronavirus kind of reshaped Wisconsin. Governor Evers on Tuesday asked to speak to the state to talk about the growing and lethal threat of COVID.
Our bars, restaurants, small businesses, families and farmers will continue to suffer if we don't take action right now.
The idea that we could have a vaccine for coronavirus after just having discovered it in nature is extraordinarily exciting.
We want to also work on making sure that we have an effective distribution of that vaccine.
Busy week in Wisconsin in the wake of the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis.
Walk with us! Walk with us!
Protests throughout the state, some of them turned violent. When you go down State Street, you'll see boarded up businesses covered with art. JR, at the start of the year, if I would have given you the odds that a president and his Democratic challenger would be in the city where you were born, what odds would you have given me against that happening?
Never been my wildest dreams.
Since March of 2019, Democratic National Convention coming to Milwaukee. Now it stands for Democrats Not Coming.
In excess of 500,000 ballots have already been mailed out by the clerks of Wisconsin.
I've lost all confidence in you.
I am not withdrawing this chair.
It's a bad look when the governor is unaware that his staff is taping him in a conversation with leaders.
I will not discuss personnel issues.
Governor Evers did as much as he could to help us with a special session. That didn't happen.
Dan Kelly has an agenda.
This behavior by opponents has been so outside the bounds of appropriate behavior.
The Supreme Court said Wisconsin absentee ballots must be in and due 8 p.m. on November 3. Joe Biden wins Wisconsin by about 20,400 votes. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a week that the news just keeps happening. JR, I've been a journalist for now. I'm finishing my 51st year. It's been an amazing ride. Can you remember a more newsworthy year than 2020?
Let's just say that the idea of a weekend off is a foreign concept this year.
I understand. Okay. Good answer. COVID-19, a term that we had never heard 1 year ago. The pandemic, major news story. So traditionally, year in reviews, we count down the top 10. Well, it was so dominated by the pandemic. We're going to walk through nine major stories this year, three of them pandemic related, and then we'll take a look at the future. So we're going to start with the human toll of the pandemic. Very interesting facts, numbers, sad numbers. As of today, 448,441 total confirmed cases in Wisconsin, 4,255 deaths. Now, let me put that in comparison. That is equal to the populations. The following Wisconsin cities have populations of about 4,255: Oconto, Viroqua, Mauston, and Dodgeville. One more thing about the 4,255 deaths. Excuse me. Between November 17th and today, December 17th, one-third of all the deaths occurred in the last months. But let's keep talking about the human toll. We have 19,785 hospitalized. According to the DHS briefing today, the seven-day average was 3,192. Our hospital beds were at 82% of capacity. 156 total patients cared for at the State Fair Park, a temporary hospital. Wisconsin ranked 17th worst nationally for weekly cases, ninth worst in the total cases since January, and 2.722 million tests conducted so far, more than 900,000, I think 970,000 of them by National Guard members. And DHS added a critically high category to the disease activity to their dashboard recently, and just because of the surge. So let's listen to some of our state officials talking about the human toll of the pandemic of COVID-19 in 2020.
Wisconsin is in a much more serious situation today than we were a month ago, or even when the governor declared a public health emergency in March. between the data showing Wisconsin's community spread and the science informing us that people can spread COVID-19 without even knowing it, we need to take every action possible to protect ourselves and our communities. And this is where the science and the governor's actions today intersect.
What is your plan? Do you have anything at all? You have blood on your hands by not taking any action to save our citizens from this horrible epidemic.
Well, what we've heard from the opposition is an attempt to deflect from the issue of the Department of Health not obeying the law. We do have, as was mentioned, the LRB analysis pointing out the fact that this flies in the face of the Supreme Court decision earlier this year. This is not a debate on COVID. It's a debate on whether DHS is following the law. And I would argue they are not following the law. They are breaking the law. We're not debating COVID. We're debating whether government should go beyond the consent of the governed. And that's why we're here, and we are here to stop that. It's called doing your job.
What we know about the virus in terms of how quickly it spreads through a population, if we do nothing, is that it's very rapid, and a large proportion of the people will become exposed in a relatively short period of time. So left to its own devices, we could have 10 times more cases and more deaths than we have right now. In fact, that's what would be expected if we didn't do infection prevention like we're doing. Knowing what we know about this virus, it could have been dramatically worse, 10, 20 times worse than it is. The only reason it's not is because we have done the things that the evidence shows reduces transmission. So yes, I'd say strongly the evidence suggests that what we've been doing has made a very large difference.
There's still a virus out there. It's still killing people at record rates. And I can't believe that whether they increase their majority or not, that they're in favor of doing nothing. We just can't, we can't do nothing. That's the bottom line. We, as a state, if we just let this run rampant for months, we will lose lives, and there's just absolutely no reason why we can't get it done.
We should not be having contact with other human beings that we do not live with. Hard stop. We have the ability to do this, to turn the corner, to stop the spread, but it will require us all to stay home as much as possible and reduce our social contacts to people that we live with.
Thanks for your patience, JR. I know you've got some comments on the next topic, the economic toll, but just a few facts before we get to you. 439,400 non-farm Wisconsin jobs lost between March and April. The April jobless rate hit a record 14.1% in April, dropped to 5.9% in October. And today, the Department of Workforce Development said the unemployment rate had dropped to 5%. Record 8.23 million claims for weekly unemployment insurance benefits filed between March and November. More than 600,000 claims still unresolved, or maybe a little bit lower, pending that DWD update today. Federal Reserve said Wisconsin's gross domestic product dropped 8% in just 3 months. Pandemic crippled major industries like tourism, lodging, restaurants, and bars. Our three pro teams played before fans. Well, no fans, no money-spending fans. Huge impact in Milwaukee and Green Bay. The governor spent $2 billion in federal aid. That ends January 1. Now, they say in Washington they're close to a new package. The governor says that's desperately needed because he first estimated that if the state has to absorb pandemic costs in the first quarter of next year without federal aid, it would cost $541 million. Now he's revised that down to more than $400 million. Okay, sorry, JR, your turn. The economic toll.
Well, what I was going to add is that it's just kind of remarkable that as dire things have been at times in Wisconsin in 2020, actually state revenues are not in that bad a shape. Now, there are a couple reasons for that. One, the governor did take a number of steps to try and pare back state spending in light of what's going on. Obviously, it's hit some agencies such as University of Wisconsin System a little more than others, but we're actually in okay shape, and there was a unique phenomenon this year with way we spend money. We bought more things online, so it drove up sales tax revenue. It's really in revenue from home improvement stores shot up. I know it shot up in my family this year. So it's kind of a fascinating way to look at how our behavior changed in light of COVID, and that we're not that bad of shape, but there are a lot of cliffs out there and challenges in the next budget that could get worse depending on how the stimulus package, the second package coming from DC, how it pans out, whether it's enough to turn the tide and get the economy back on its feet.
Right. Good comments. Now let's hear from some state officials talking about the economic toll, starting with Missy Hughes of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, listing the industries that got hit. Please.
We've seen a 40% drop in restaurant sales and practically 100% decrease in travel-related sales. So to give you a sense of what small business means in Wisconsin, I want to share this with you. We have 50,000 small retailers, 44,000 small healthcare and social service providers, 23,000 arts and entertainment and recreation businesses, and over 17,000 small food and lodging businesses. All of these businesses have been impacted by the coronavirus.
Nearly 400,000 Wisconsinites have now filed for unemployment insurance benefits since March 25th. We're looking at in excess of 16% unemployment in Wisconsin. In fact, it was 16% a week ago, so it's probably closer to 17% now. The highest we've ever recorded in Wisconsin history is 13% in 1982, and the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development projects unemployment to go as high as 27%. My guess is that it'll probably go longer if we continue this safer at home. The bottom line is that we recognize that the governor has to protect lives.
Under our Safer at Home order, every business across our state can do things like deliveries, mails, curbside pickup, and curbside drop-off. So, for example, whether you're an upholsterer, a taxidermist, a dog groomer, or you rent recreational equipment like kayaks, paddle boats, or canoes, you'll be able to provide some of those services under the Safer at Home order. You've heard me say many times that this virus sets our timeline, and we have to approach this like turning a dial, not flipping a switch. Believe me, I understand that is a frustrating answer. Small businesses can't operate on hypotheticals. Workers can't pay their rent with a promise of a future economic recovery. There is nothing I would love more than to provide some certainty on when we can open up more of our economy.
If you would extrapolate out, you know, let's say we triple the amount of deaths, so we have 1,000 deaths in the state of Wisconsin, and you divide that out by 5.8 million people, comes out to 0.0001. And so I tried to find, you know, just to put it in perspective, I tried to find something that people die from with the same percentages, and the only thing I could find is dying in plane crashes. So what I'm trying to put into perspective is when a plane crashes, it's horrible, it's tragic, but we don't shut the whole economy down. We had business people here today that are probably, you know, going to never open again, or their sales are down 50%. The longer this goes on, so many other things that this shutdown, you know, is causing, that it's going to be long-term effects.
The unemployment rate in Wisconsin when this started was at what, 3.1%, 3.4%. And then in just a matter of a few short weeks, we jumped up to 14%. That has never happened in history. No administration has ever faced anything like that before. Under the circumstances, I think we have done a good job. It's not good enough for a lot of the people who aren't getting benefits, and I feel bad for every one of those people. And it's going to get better. We are going to stand this system up, and we are going to take care of people.
The pandemic also stressed many of our systems, including our safety nets systems. Some of them failed. JR, I know you've got comments on this, so let me set it up for you this way, by talking about some of these systems stressed and in some cases failed. Backlog and unpaid claims for jobless benefits forced the firing of DWD Secretary Caleb Frostman. Hospital ICU beds were maxed out. COVID-19 sickened nurses and other healthcare workers. The governor's mask up and his 25% occupancy limit were challenged in the courts. In fact, that was argued even today in the state Supreme Court. The K-12 schools went online in March. Many reopened online in the fall as local school districts struggled to keep students, faculty, and staff members safe. Contact tracing systems were swamped, and they admitted that in October and November. Now they say they're getting a little bit back in touch. County by county, public health systems measures varied widely. The Capitol closed to the public in mid-March, still closed, and in-person court sessions ordered and jury trials were canceled. Talk to me about the stress on the systems, please.
A couple of things. The backlog with unemployment insurance, that may be one of Governor Evers' biggest vulnerabilities heading into his reelection bid in 2022. I mean, the campaign ads almost write themselves for Republicans about the people who waited weeks and weeks and then months to get unemployment checks, which were a lifeline in this pandemic. So there's that issue to watch politically going forward. Really an issue for Governor Evers, too. We're a little bit unique in Wisconsin in the legal challenges to the governor's actions and how he ran into so many brick walls with the courts. Now, obviously, there is a broken relationship between the governor and Republican lawmakers. You could argue that the governor could have at least tried to work out with Republicans some kind of administrative rule process to put some things in place. But it was clear time and time again that Republicans weren't really interested in a statewide approach. They favored more of a regional approach. And critics of Republicans have said, look, you know, way back in the spring, they kept telling us they're going to have a bill, which they didn't produce until well after the election. And two, they kept saying no statewide approach, but a regional approach. And then when local authorities began to exercise their powers, you saw more and more lawsuits, especially from conservative groups, challenging those. So it's been a political fight that's kind of colored our response to COVID-19 in Wisconsin.
Right. And now we've got a short video. It's only about 2 minutes long, talking about the economic stress on many of our lifeline, our systems. Please.
We are doubling down on the Badger Bounce Back Plan to test every Wisconsin resident who needs a test, to trace every positive case and their contacts, and to track the spread of the virus. We set this goal of 85,000 tests a week, which is about 12,000 tests a day. Today, we are just over 10,000. We will be better informed about whether 85,000 a week is enough as we understand more closely the prevalence of the disease in this state. We will continue to expand our capacity, likely well beyond 85 if we're able.
The virus is every place in the state of Wisconsin. We have schools in every place in the state of Wisconsin. The difference is this, is that all school districts look different. A lot of schools are small school districts in the state of Wisconsin where they already have small class sizes, where they already have the opportunity to keep kids so physically distant. That isn't the case in every school district. And so it's really important. There's a distinction between the two. The virus is every place in the state of Wisconsin. It's taking a toll every place in the state of Wisconsin. School districts have different challenges and opportunities. I don't think anybody's out there kind of hanging on for dear life to determine what Scott Fitzgerald is going to say next about this. I think they're actually doing things in the local level.
One of the creative ideas we would like to do is to take unemployment insurance recipients who potentially don't have the ability to go back to their former job and see if they would have the ability to go and do contact tracing, do it for a limited amount of time and be paid for it in addition to the unemployment benefits that they deserve. We also would like to take students who are in medical school or studying public health and allow them to also become contact tracers for a semester, pay them so that we would have more folks on the ground to help deal with the pandemic, but also help educate those students going into the field and do it in a way that would allow them to get credit. So we know that the restrictions that are in place, put in forward by the CDC for guidelines, are the ones that we should all follow. We know that people should wear a mask, wash their hands, socially distance when able, and try to keep social distance or social gatherings to a minimum. But we also recognize that our economy has to continue. People have to keep working.
JR, you've really been a student of the distrust between Governor Evers and the legislative leaders. So before I ask you to talk about that, let me just make just a couple points here. The legislature ignored the governor's call for action on COVID-19, on gun control, criminal justice reforms, and delaying the April election. The governor and GOP leaders didn't meet for months after Evers' aide recorded that phone call. The legislature didn't meet after April session. And in that April session, they authorized Evers to spend that $2 billion in federal aid that I alluded to earlier. The Assembly Republicans drafted a COVID-19 package with changes, some of which Evers objected to, and asked Assembly Republicans wanted a December vote on these changes, but Senate Republicans said, we are not coming back in December. Okay, talk to me about the distrust back and forth, please.
Well, the seeds of this were planted 2 years ago in that lame duck session in December of 2018, when Republicans, looking at the prospect of Tony Evers as governor and Josh Call as attorney general, decided to give themselves new oversight of those two offices. That began to fracture the relationship. Now, after there were a couple of court cases that challenged those rulings, Governor Evers moved quickly after one to try and rescind a number of appointments that Governor Walker had made. That ended up further souring the relationship between Democrats and Republicans. And it's just been one thing after another where you've seen just kind of a series of slights between the two. There's no trust. In politics, there's no trust. There's no foundation to have a conversation to get things done. And that's kind of where we're at, that they're struggling at this point just to kind of get past, get into conversations to talk about how to move forward and have that trust to negotiate with each other in good faith and come out with a product. Now, they're meeting regularly on this COVID-19 bill. We'll see if they can produce something significant out of that. But so far, the track record has not been great between Governor Evers and the Republican legislative leaders on getting big things done in this Capitol.
Yeah, good points. The death of George Floyd at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer, that set off protests that led to riots and looting. So the protests for Black Lives Matter and defund the police, those protests occurred in Milwaukee, Madison, and Kenosha. Tragically, Kenosha, two people were killed. That's now in the courts, as we all know, with Mr. Rittenhouse. Buildings burned down in looting. Protesters toppled two Capitol statues and broke Capitol windows. One of them, the statue of Christian Haig, is about to be brought back, thanks to, in some part, to federal funds. Senator Tim Carpenter was attacked and beaten when he tried to photograph Madison protest. And late in the year, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss formed a task force on racial disparities, which has had two or three different meetings. Well, moving on to another one, huge issue, the November election. Wow, where do we start? COVID-19 cost Milwaukee a chance to host the Democratic National Convention. But I'm also struck, JR, and I'll ask you about this in a minute, major changes to how we vote in Wisconsin. Record wave of 1.9 million absentee ballots, either mailed, drop-boxed, or dropped off in person to clerks. Many cast weeks before the election. Voter registration events sponsored by pro sports teams. Drop-off voting and registration in City of Madison parks. Record turnout in November. Third for president, 3.2 million votes cast. After the recount, Democrat only in two counties, Milwaukee and Dane counties, Democrat Joe Biden beat the president by 20,600 votes. Republicans kept control of the legislature, picking up two state Senate seats and losing two assembly seats. The lawsuits by President Trump's campaign and his supporters failed in state and federal courts. And finally, just this week, Wisconsin's 10 Electoral College ballots went for Mr. Biden. Okay, JR, your take on the fascinating election.
Well, the president, even though electoral votes have been cast, is not giving up. He's filed an appeal with the Seventh Circuit and a federal judge's ruling that rejected his request to throw out the results of the Wisconsin election, have the GOP control legislature basically decide who won Wisconsin electoral votes. So even though at this point Trump and his allies are 0-8 in Wisconsin trying to get the courts to overturn the results, that fight is not quite over. When I talk to attorneys, they tell me it's a long shot bid at best. But I get the impression there are a couple of things going on. One, the president's trying to undermine legitimacy of Joe Biden being the next president. He also doesn't want to admit that he lost. Number two, the president is raising money off of this legal fight to pay for his political activities in the coming years. And three, he's keeping the possibility open of running again in 2024. So there's a political angle to this. What's interesting is in the Capitol, the receptive audience from Republicans from the complaints of the president that this election was quote unquote rigged against him. It's interesting. I've been asking around about what's been going on. Remember, there was a hearing a week ago to air grievances from some people who were Trump supporters about how they viewed the election, how it was run. what's kind of been emerging is that there's a group of Republican base, a part of the Republican base, that is convinced that the president's right, that this was stolen from them, that there were ballot machines that flipped votes, those kinds of things. There's no evidence of that whatsoever. In fact, the Elections Commission requires an audit of election systems after every election. In looking at that audit, the hand count of ballots in places that use Dominion machines, which often target of Trump supporters, found that the tallies from those machines matched the hand count. The Elections Commission put out something this week that in the 15 counties in Wisconsin that use only Dominion voting machines, President Trump actually did better in 2020 than he did in 2016. Right. He beat Joe Biden by about 100,000 votes, 101,000 votes and change. This time around, a better performance than those 15 counties 4 years ago. So there's no evidence of fraud, but there are people who truly believe that something was amiss. There's a second kind of pool of Republicans in which they feel like the way the elections have been run in Wisconsin, that the envelope's been pushed to benefit Democrats, that clerks in places like Dane and Milwaukee counties have done things that have aided turnout there, where their Republican clerks in rural areas don't do the same things. They're unhappy about the election commission, and they want to push back about how this election was run because they feel like if they don't push back now, they won't get that opportunity. The downside of that, though, people tell me, is that by doing that, having a discussion about whether the Elections Commission did have the authority, for example, to tell clerks they can fill in misinformation on absentee ballots, such as a witness zip code or a witness's municipality, is that allowed? That maybe is a legitimate discussion, but by keep talking about irregularities, you are feeding the people who are convinced the conspiracy theories and just kind of giving the fuel to that fire. Then there's a third group of Republicans who just want this all to go away, who want to try and move past this and get to, you know, what's next, but they acknowledge they can't speak up because the president is a dominant figure in Republican politics. You can't cross him. Look at how hard it is for Republicans to acknowledge that Joe Biden won in Wisconsin. Again, one, there are some who don't believe he did, and two, there are Republican elected officials who believe that the envelope was pushed, but just acknowledging that Joe Biden won is tough to get out of Republicans sometimes. It's fascinating to watch just the fallout of this election. It raises questions about how are we going to perform going forward? Is it going to be the same thing every time where it becomes a constant, I didn't lose, it was taken from me? And Republicans are quick to point out Stacey Abrams in Georgia, the claims of irregularities down there. They feel like what they're doing now is no different from Democrats pushing the Russian angle with President Trump in his 2016 election. But Democrats, over and over again in conversation with them, are like, this is dangerous. This is not good for democracy. They're undermining faith in our system. And what were these complaints 4 years ago? We ran this election almost the exact same way we did 4 years ago, except for there being more absentee ballots. Why weren't these concerns raised then, they ask, and they're being raised now? Well, it's because Trump lost. And he's such a dominant figure in Republican politics. Republicans can't move on until the president moves on, and I don't know when that's going to happen.
Well, and 126 U.S. House Republicans joined this suit by the Texas Attorney General, which the Supreme Court quickly dismissed, challenged the results in those four states. J.R., I don't know the answer to this. Do you know how many Wisconsin Republican congressmen were among those 126? Maybe you don't.
Tom Tiffany Monach was the only one who signed on. And, you know, his district, as people have told me, it's more Trumpy than his Republican. The president has best performance in the 7th Congressional District of any of the seats in Wisconsin. There's no, I guess the downside for Tiffany is a perception of some that he's crossed a line you shouldn't cross as elected official. But at the same time, if you're in a district that Trumpy, you're going to be a defender of the president, and you have to worry more about a primary challenge if you're not sufficiently pro-Trump than you do about irritating Democrats. So I'm not sure what the downside is for Tiffany in that district, per se.
Right. Okay, thanks. Thanks to Wisconsin Eye videographers, you're about to see a fascinating compendium of some of this debate over the election. It opens with a Republican member of the Elections Commission, Bob Spindell, admitting Republicans do better by showing up at the polls on Election Day. Democrats do better with absentee ballots. It ends with a very sharp exchange between Justice Kurofsky and the Trump campaign lawyer, James Troupas, who testified in Washington yesterday before Ron Johnson's committee. But let's watch this very interesting video on the presidential election, please.
It seems to me that Commissioner Thompson and Ann are in the process of trying to push the Democratic agenda of an all-male in election, or a situation where they're trying to push you shouldn't encourage people to vote absentee. We have three different ways in this state that you're allowed to vote. One is by mail absentee, another one is by in-person on election day, and the third one is in-person absentee voting. To make it perfectly clear, the Republicans are better voting on election day than are the Democrats, and the Democrats are better at using mail absentee votes than the Republicans are.
Our elected elections officials work so goddamn hard. We had a smooth election under extremely difficult conditions, such as a pandemic. It's just more of the same BS, frankly. Real tired of it. You have an opportunity for a recall. Well, it's well within your rights to do that. Recount. So do it. Get that recount done so we can move on with our lives.
I cannot express strongly enough my disappointment in your actions yesterday, particularly after I formally asked at our last meeting that we would have a meeting and a chance to discuss prior to any certification. The law is very clear, and you have violated the law as our chair. As a consequence, I believe that I've lost all confidence in you as the chair. I can't see that we can go forward as a group. I don't think you realize, even at this moment, how much you have destroyed the bipartisan nature of what has gone on. I'm going to call for your resignation as chair. We're going to need a new chair.
Number one, I am not withdrawing as chair. Number two, what I did was not illegal. You are misinformed about what took place and absolutely incorrect.
I would like to state officially on the record that I have complete confidence in the voting equipment in use in Wisconsin.
The certification of the results of the 2020 Wisconsin presidential election after the Dane County and Milwaukee County recounts is affirmed. The certified results show Joseph Biden and Kamala Harris received 1,630,866 votes, and Donald Trump and Michael Pence received 1,610,184 votes. The petitioner appellants here have not demonstrated that an erroneous interpretation of Wisconsin early voting laws happened here. And in the complaint, there really is no allegation here of widespread fraud. That's not the issue. There is no credible evidence of any misconduct or wide-scale fraud.
And what you want is you want us to overturn this election so that your king can stay in power. And that is so un-American. And for you to say that anyone in Wisconsin engaged in fraud, for you to perpetuate that fallacy on the people of Wisconsin and the people of the United States and America in what has been called the most significant election in our lifetime is nothing short of shameful.
I believe that this country was founded on the principle of the rule of law. When we forget the rule of law, when we forget to enforce mandatory statutes as are involved here, we have lost our country.
That exchange between Justice Karofsky and Jim Troop, the lawyer for President Trump's campaign, leads us to the very important role that the courts played in all the news in 2020. Let's just talk about some of the important developments. Liberal Jill Karofsky, who you just heard from, beat conservative Justice Daniel Kelly in the April election, an election conducted amid the COVID pandemic. The U.S. Supreme Court twice ruled on absentee ballots for the April and November elections, Wisconsin elections. In May, the Wisconsin Supreme Court struck down Governor Evers' Safer at Home order. The Wisconsin Supreme Court agreed to clarify the governor's powers to declare emergencies for more than 60 days, without some type of action, striking it down, agreement, or approval by the Assembly and Senate. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court delayed a ruling on a lawsuit filed to force the names of 230,000 movers. Those are one-time voters who did not respond to postcards sent to their old addresses. The lawsuit sought to have them stricken from the voter rolls. Roll of the courts, JR, please.
Oh, I mean, just one thing, think about the consequences that court elections have. If you think about it, President Trump and his allies won one minor court ruling in all of the dozens of lawsuits they filed in Wisconsin and elsewhere since the election. That one minor victory was shortening by 3 days the window that first-time absentee ballot voters had to show their ID in Pennsylvania. Jill Karofsky beating Daniel Kelly in April may be all that stood in the way of Donald Trump getting a victory in Wisconsin, having been one of the only courts to really give him a win. Now, a couple of caveats there. In reading the decisions and the dissents in that ruling from the Supreme Court this week, it is not clear that conservative justices Pat Rogensack, Annette Ziegler, and Rebecca Bradley would have granted the president's request to throw out ballots. It doesn't seem like they had much interest in his argument about the use of an envelope when you vote early in person that doubles as your written request for an absentee ballot, which is required in state law. That was the bulk of the 220,000 votes he sought to disqualify in Dana Milwaukee counties. They didn't think there was enough evidence to support his request to throw out some 23,000 absentee ballots cast by those who are definitely confined. Under that status, if you claim it, you don't have to show a photo ID to cast your absentee ballot. But there were concerns from those justices about the advice in the Elections Commission allowing clerks to cure ballots, again, with missing information such as a witness's zip code. There were concerns, especially from Justice Pat Rogensack, about Democracy in the Park, in which the Madison clerk had poll workers go out to the 200 city parks and collect absentee ballots a month out from the election. But if Karofsky hadn't won, partly because of the Democratic turnout for the primary for president back in April, you may have seen a very different decision in the Supreme Court this week. And if that had happened, you can only imagine the fuel it would have given to the fire that the president's trying to burn about this election. So it shows you how impactful these elections can be in Wisconsin.
Right, and I just want to offer a footnote. This year saw the election of Justice Karofsky. Last year saw the election of Justice Hagedorn. And the year before, the election of Justice Dalit. There will be no April election. The next one up is Chief Justice Pat Rogensack in 2022, April of 2022. 23, thank you. I appreciate the correction. Okay, JR, next topic, water problems. We've seen this debated, but just quickly, PFAS now. And there was an action plan recommended just yesterday by state officials to deal with the PFAS problem. It's emerged as a major threat, especially in northeast Wisconsin in the Marinette area. Excuse me. More nitrates are found in groundwater tests statewide. Assembly has passed clean water packages of bills, but the Senate doesn't meet to take them up. This is a big issue going into the next year. And one more topic, JR, before we look ahead. Foxconn, major complex, massive Mount Pleasant manufacturing facility under construction in Racine County. Foxconn officials said, look, we responded to COVID-19 by making face masks and ventilators. Won't detail future manufacturing plans. State officials refused to award Foxconn any of $212 million that had been budgeted, set aside in tax credits, saying Foxconn missed investment and hiring goals required in 2017. And JR, correct me if I'm wrong, but DOA is now projecting that Foxconn will miss all those credits in the next budget, 21-23. Do I have that right?
Absolutely, because they don't believe that the Foxconn's meeting the contract it signed under former Governor Scott Walker, because the project right now is not the project envisioned several years ago. It's building much smaller screens, or that might be the plan eventually. It's not building the Wisconsin Valley image of these massive screens that would transform the entire region economically. It's just not happening right now.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's enough about the news that happened in 2020. Let's look ahead. We're not going to make any predictions, but I just want to highlight with JR some of the major decisions that have to be made in 2021, starting with distribution of the COVID-19 vaccines, who gets vaccinated and when, and who makes those decisions. And that last point is important because in their package of COVID-19, Assembly Republicans say, we want to be consulted, or more, we may want to have the authority to decide who gets vaccines. So that last point is interesting. Governor Evers will introduce his 21-23 budget in February. The state Supreme Court will come out with some clarification of the authority of governors to declare ongoing public health emergencies. We've touched on that during the show. There will be a new state superintendent of public instruction elected in April. The current one has announced that Carolyn Stanford Taylor, she will not seek re-election. The Republican-controlled legislature must pass its own 21-23 budget by July 1. And I only want to add one more point before I turn it over to JR. Next year, 2021, will require the redrawing of congressional and legislative districts. Okay, Mr. Not Pundit, but what are you looking for in 2021, JR?
Well, on your last point about redistricting, my bet is not just that the courts will draw the lines, but my question is which court will draw them. The going bet has been that Republicans rather go to the state Supreme Court because it has a 4-3 conservative majority rather than the federal courts, especially because federal judges in Wisconsin have expressed some sympathy to Democrats on their complaints about these maps being gerrymandered in past cases. So watch that. How's that process play out? Now, there's always a chance of a major, and I mean major miracle, where Robin Voss and Tony Evers agree on a map with Devin Lemahue, but I just don't see that happening right now. So there's that. With the budget, I mean, fascinating to watch. You talked about, you know, the new fiscal year begins July 1st, but I wonder if they'll get one done on time. Not that legislature will pass a budget, but pass a budget the governor can sign by July 1st. The reason I bring that up is that, you know, if you look at our fiscal situation, we have money that we're projected to have as a surplus at the end of this fiscal year, June 30th. We expect revenue growth the next biennium. In Wisconsin, we're not like the federal government where we shut down, there's no budget. It keeps going on. So will there be pressure to reach a compromise? Because this is an important budget for Evers. It's his reelection budget. Governors, for as long as I can remember, have two different approaches to their budgets. Their first budget, their four-year term, is the pain budget. They do things they have to do to set themselves up for the reelection budget, which is more generous, which makes people happier, has more upbeat things. Well, Governor Evers is going to write a budget in the middle of a pandemic. So there's not going to be a lot of happy news, I don't think, in that budget. However, you know, will he push for things that his base wants? Will Republicans agree with him on anything? Or do we end up like we have in the past, where things drag on, and then once schools need their aid payments in the fall, we see world pressure and get something done? Maybe. You know, we're talking split control again with a more conservative state Senate than we had this last session. It's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out. Election integrity. That is a buzzword I've been hearing from Republican lawmakers since November 3rd. What will that look like? If we had a functioning Capitol, you could imagine Tony Evers, Robin Voss, and Devin Lemieux sitting down and hammering out some kind of compromise that gives and takes a little bit for every side about what we should do with elections in Wisconsin. How do we handle if we're continuing having large numbers of absentee ballots cast each cycle? We don't have a functioning Capitol right now. So more likely what I expect to happen is you'll see Republicans pass a bill that makes their base happy, that addresses the complaints of President Trump supporters, and that Governor Evers is more likely to veto. Because remember, Democrats are looking at this going, okay, we had a Supreme Court decision, the Trump lawsuit, that didn't get to the merits of the Trump complaints about cured ballots, indefinitely confined, those absentee ballot requests, Democracy in the Park. But we got a concurring opinion from Brian Hagedorn that said if he did take up the merits, here's how he would have ruled. And he would have ruled that there weren't any problems with curing ballots. There weren't any issues with Democracy in the Park. There weren't issues with these things. So Democrats have an idea where that court would end up if another lawsuit came before them. They're going, well, we don't need to give in anything because we know where the court's going to be for at least the next couple of years on these issues. So watch how that plays out. And if that becomes a big deal this spring about trying to do something that can make clerks' lives easier, but also get both sides to agree upon and pass.
Right. Okay. We've tried to summarize some of the major news in 2020. Rest assured, Wisconsin I, and I know WisPolitics, will be on the job for 2021. Let's just wrap it up. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
I want to thank J.R. for helping me discern all the news of 2020. Goodbye, 2020. Here's hoping for better news in 2021. Thank you.
Rewind, your year in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.